When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's re-release of TSFP Presents Cult Heroes. This week we're talking about two men, two great characters in Spanish football at the opposite ends of the follicle spectrum. Iván de la Peña and Mono Burgos. Hello and welcome to TSFP Presents Cult Heroes. It's episode 3. We're going to talk about Iván de la Peña and Mono Burgos.
Yes.
We'll start with Iván de la Peña. And my question is, for whom is he a cult hero? Is he a cult hero for Barcelona or is he a cult hero for Espanyol?
Both. And that's in a way part of why he's a cult hero, because he has, because there are people who have fond memories for him for both, despite the fact that he led an Espanyol victory against Barcelona, which did Barcelona a huge amount of damage, despite the fact from Espanyol's point of view that, of course, he was identified with that Barcelona team to begin with. But I also think that he goes beyond both of them, because in a way, his cult status, and we've talked a lot throughout this series already about what it is that makes them different from just a player that people like or just a player that was important, is some point of identification. And I think the identification with Iván de la Peña is kind of mixed. It's kind of varied, but part of it is this sense that he didn't quite reach the level he should have done, and that Espanyol fans like him because actually he reached a higher level with them than with Barcelona, certainly a higher level of consistency maybe. And that with Barcelona, I think there's that sense that he was what a Barcelona player should be, but perhaps at a time when Barcelona weren't.
I think a key part of being a cult hero, in this case certainly, is that kind of romantic idea of a player never quite becoming the player they should have been. I also think De La Peña is a cult hero for lovers of 90s football. Back in those days, it was an exotic name. I wasn't a big watcher of Spanish football then. I was just a youngster. But I did play a lot of Championship Manager. And in Champ Manager 97-98...
Was he good?
He was very, very good.
Right.
He was always right up there at the top of the rankings.
But the thing is, if we're going to go for Championship Manager, and I may well be showing my age here, you know, you're going to go for Paul Warhurst and Adiyakin Bae and people like that who were absolutely amazing on Champ Manager, weren't they?
Yes.
I mean, those episodes are maybe forthcoming, yeah. Mm. But for now, let's stick to La Peña.
Also, maybe another thing to add to the cult status of De La Peña, just on a simplistic level, his appearance. He was like almost immediately recognisable.
He was an egg.
He wasn't a heck because he was...
And also ageless, because he shaved his head from a very young age, literally from when he was like 18 or 19, he sort of looked the same right the way throughout his career. Like, his physical appearance didn't change very much because there weren't the visible signs of players' kind of hairstyles changing and losing their hair. So he was basically the same.
It's true. Hence the nickname, well, the two nicknames, in fact, Lo Pelat, the peeled one or the shaved off one.
Yes.
And of course, the Little Buddha.
Little Buddha is such a good nickname.
Because he was quite little.
Oh, he was little.
He was little and, you know, occasionally a little bit rotund.
I mean, but he was an egg shape.
He was an egg shape.
The whole thing was an egg shape. He's from Santander, and funnily enough, I've eaten in the restaurant owned by his father in the Sardinero, on the fishing port, the Sardinero, at the Sardine port,
right,
near the stadium. And I ate there in 95, I think. My brother was living in Santander at the time. We went to visit him, and we went to this restaurant, which was this classic, noisy, shouty, incredibly busy fish restaurant.
Yes.
With no airs or graces whatsoever. But everybody knew that this is the restaurant of the dad of De La Peña because this kid was going to be the best player in Spain.
And this is the time that you just sort of moved to Spain, isn't it?
Well, I hadn't moved to Spain yet. I didn't go to Spain until the following year. So my brother was already there because he'd studied there. So he was there in 94, 95 in Santander, I think. Or maybe the year before, maybe 93, 94. And I was in Oviedo 96, 97.
But you would have seen De La Peña, sort of.
A lot of De La Peña. He was playing for Barcelona in the year that I first lived in Spain in 96, 97, which, of course, as we've talked about on previous pods, and go and find them because they're a lot of fun. Our Great Seasons pod, 96, 97, when we talked about Bobby Robson, when we talked about Brazilian Ronaldo, he was in that Barcelona team, but not as often as he should have been.
Hmm.
And that's kind of, again, that's a recurring theme of his whole career. That sense that, hang on, surely someone had to put this guy in and keep him in a bit more.
But like you say, at that point, and for a year or two, he was the most hyped, the most exciting, the biggest young talent in Spanish football. He came through the same time as Raúl. They played together for youth teams. And when Raúl went on to be the standard bearer for Spain and for Real Madrid as well, De La Peña's career took a much more...
Yeah, I mean, he was in that Barcelona generation, which was a strong generation without really being quite strong enough. So he was in the generation with people like Tony Belathaman, Roger Garcia, Celades.
It was the Quinta del Mini they were
called. That's right, I'd forgotten that.
Celades is another one who... Celades, because he's basically had the same haircut forever, if you look at photos from then and now, both him and De La Peña just look the same.
They look the same.
He was given his debut by Johan Cruyff, aged 19, in the 1995-96 season.
And that's basically the point. In a way, that's the kernel of this whole thing. He was Cruyff's big thing, at the same time as Cruyff would consistently criticise him.
Hmm.
But then that's kind of what Cruyff did.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to say, because he was sort of flitting between Barca and Barca B in that season. He scored goals for Barcelona. He scored some brilliant goals for Barca B as well. He was a bit like Vinicius.
There's no higher praise.
I mean, in some ways...
He was the Vinicius of his day.
Yeah. In some ways,
hyped teenager. Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, between the first team and the B team.
Stylistically, he could not be any more different, of course, because Vinicius is dynamic, but maybe lacks control.
Yes.
De La Peña was all about control, with only one foot, admittedly, but all about control, and had absolutely no dynamism whatsoever. And yet, when he did run, it's not like he looked slow and sluggish or anything. He just didn't really fancy it a lot of the time.
And what a crazy season that was as well, 95-96. That was the year that Barca, you know, they had a chance of winning the league. Atleti won the league instead. They got to the final of the cup. Atleti beat them in the final of the cup. They got to the UEFA Cup semi-finals. They were beaten by Bayern, and Cruyff left De La Peña on the bench in that game. And of course, because of the series of failures that I've just listed, Cruyff got the sack.
Yeah, and then in comes Bobby Robson, who... They spend a lot of money that summer as well. That Barcelona team invests really, really heavily, which, of course, makes his chances of playing more difficult. Bobby Robson tended to play with Popescu, Pep Guardiola in the middle of midfield. There isn't really a natural place for
De
La Peña.
They were sort of the two in the 4-2, they were the pivot. 3-1.
Yeah, they were the two pivot players more often than not. De La Peña would sometimes play in a slightly more advanced position. What shifted things a little bit, because he did actually play a lot of games in the end, he just didn't ever seem to be the first-choice midfielder, was it actually Brazilian Ronaldo saying to Bobby Robson, and Bobby Robson had many qualities as a manager, and I think possibly the most important one was he was a manager who listened to his players. And that's often been interpreted as he was weak, he just did what they said, he didn't have any power. But I actually think it shows a real quality to listen to players and know which ones to listen to. And Brazilian Ronaldo was one basically saying to him, listen, stick this guy in, because he's the one giving me the ball all the time. He's the one that can pass.
There's one brilliant game from that season. If you want to go and check out some highlights, I recommend. It's from the Copa del Rey. It's Barca against Atleti. I think it was the quarterfinals. It's the 5-4.
It's just amazing.
Unbelievable game. Atletico went 3-0 up at half-time. Pantic had scored all of them. He scored four in the end. And Barca came back to win 5-4. Ronaldo scored a hat-trick. De La Peña didn't score, but was crucial in that game. It is a bonkers game. Go and find the highlights.
It's absolutely outrageous.
Because underpinning all of this sort of cult status of him is just, he was a really good player.
I mean, he was exceptional.
I mean, we've spoken about some really good players on this pod already, and we're going to continue to do that. But in terms of sort of technical ability, I was, you know, watching some of the highlights and reminding myself of how good he was. He was amazing.
We should mention there was a really good interview with Robert Moreno, the Spain coach, a couple of months
ago. That's lovely,
I think it was in Mundo Deportivo. And they asked him, you know, which player did you love when you were a kid? And he basically said, I was obsessed with De La Peña. They're about the same age. I think maybe De La Peña's a year older. He said, I had a poster of De La Peña on my wall, my bedroom wall. And he said, I used to sneak into Camp Nou because the dad of one of our mates was on the turnstiles and could get us in for free. I could sneak into camp now just to watch him play.
Yeah.
And what I love watching was his passing.
Hmm.
That was all.
And he says to beat
one line of a team with a pass is one thing.
Yes.
To beat two is like impossible. And he would do it 5 or 6 times in a game.
Yes. Yeah, and that is him in a nutshell. And I think there is that sort of sense, isn't there, that he symbolised a Barcelona style which at that point was stuck. Obviously, it's the end of the Cruyff era. It takes a while for us to come back to a period, I suppose, starting with Rijkaard, but then obviously reinforced by Guardiola, of Barcelona re-encountering that identity. That I think there's possibly a little bit of a sense, and Robert Moreno would certainly agree with this, that he was too early for this generation of Spain players. Although he did eventually get a Spain call. It took a very long time for him to get a Spain call.
Yes.
Didn't happen until 2005, I think.
Yeah, he was 29.
With Luis Aragonés. And that showed that Aragonés could see something that, of course, he would then later really impose in 2008.
So what went wrong then? So Robson left, Van Gaal came in, didn't really fancy him.
No.
They sold
Which
him
is
to
curious, because Van Gaal, in theory at least, stylistically, is about technique. Of course, he likes his players to work like mad, and he also likes his players, this is the other thing as well, he likes his players to be very rigid, very disciplined, very much part of the system. And De La Peña was, I'm reluctant to use the word artist, which Spaniards use all the time, but he was a bit like that. He was a bit of a free spirit.
They sold him to Lazio for a lot of money, and that was when Lazio were in the middle of that insane
Mendieta,
spending spree.
The
same summer, I think it was the same summer, Christian Vieri, Marcelo Salas, Mihailovic, Stankovic and De La Peña, all of them came in the space of a few months or something. And it didn't work
at all. At all.
And was he a bit shy, a bit introverted, he didn't necessarily
was always the suggestion as well that the relationship with his wife's family was a little bit weird, that his wife's family controlled him, and that he sort of, as you say, that a bit shy, a bit introverted, sort of didn't really kind of break out, didn't really impose himself on football, on life, on anything, that he was just this sort of slightly enclosed, almost mute kind of character. And by the way, here's, to give you an example of this, now, believe it or not, we do prepare these podcasts. Try and find an interview with De La Peña. Very, very few of them out there. You find interviews with most players, even ones who didn't talk to the media very much. There's almost nothing from De La Peña out there. There's one I found from the build-up to the UEFA Cup final when Espanyol played against Sevilla, and it was the only one I could find. Which says something.
He obviously didn't necessarily succeed at Lazio. He was loaned out to Marseille, didn't go brilliantly there, back to Lazio. Anyway, he finds himself back in Spain at Espanyol, and it's curious that he's back in Barcelona but with Espanyol. But he stayed there for 9 seasons and sort of became a real legend there.
Yeah, and you know, he was, it's curious again, because you know, this is a guy that embodies what he embodies. Yeah, it's Clemente, the master of the long ball game, the master of the kind of provocative sort of defensive manager, who first sees him and thinks, okay, there's something we can do with this. Then, of course, he works with other managers who you'll all be very well aware of, you know, Pochettino in particular, and Valverde. And also Miguel Angel Lotina, who was another curious one, because he was a manager that was also very, very defensive, very dry, very dour, but could see, hang on, I've got a guy here who can pass a ball a million times better than anyone else. Given freedom, that was the other thing. He sort of had to play a little bit loose to be able to make this work.
I'm getting the kind of picture here that we're sort of painting in my mind, that he's kind of a guy that might be in a sort of, you know, 7-a-side team, who's a little bit, maybe, you know, he's a really talented one, but he doesn't necessarily have the work ethic, so he just sort of sprays passes around.
Johnny Watton.
I don't know who that is.
I played with a guy called Johnny Watton, who was who was just so much better than everyone else,
yes,
but could not be arsed.
Yes.
And he was just amazing. And his brother was a centre-back, who was this kind of, I know we're going off a massive tangent now, but his brother was a centre-back who was kind of all blood and thunder, who could really play as well, but really committed.
Yes.
And Johnny was just like, right, obviously this is Sunday football, so he's been out the night before. And
you've taken cult heroes to another level here, Sid, with a bloke that you knew once.
Exactly.
But that time at Espanyol, I mean, you know, there were some big successes
They won
the Copa del Rey in 2006. They got to the UEFA
Cup final
in 2007.
Best ever generation.
Yeah,
probably
certainly
their best ever generation.
Certainly, when you look at what's happened sort of since, those now look sort of like glory days. There are a couple of games in particular that we should focus on. And one is from 2007, the famous draw with Barca 2-2 that kind of gave the title to...
With the Tamil Dasher, yeah.
And those two, again,
the shag of the century.
Quite a partnership. And then, Sid, you posted on Twitter today your column from February 2009 about what was a really, really incredible game.
I mean, it was just absolutely bonkers. And I was sure that I'd written about De La Peña at some point. So I just sort of typed my name and De La Peña's name into the Guardian search engine. And up came this piece. And it was when Espanyol, and I actually did take a photograph of the facts because I was trying to remember the facts. It was when Espanyol played Barcelona and they beat them 2-1. But there was more to it than that. It was about how absurd this was. So, right, Espanyol hadn't won for 111 days. Barcelona hadn't lost for 174 days, right? Between the two of them, Espanyol hadn't beaten Barcelona for 27 years at the Camp Nou.
Yeah.
Right? Never in the history of Spanish football at this point, which was, I worked it out, here we go, 29,140 days, although we all know that my maths isn't worth counting on. Never in the history of Spanish football had the team at the bottom beaten the team at the top at home. Barcelona were walking their way to the league, and Espanyol went there and beat them, and De La Peña was absolutely astonishing. There's also a stat which I haven't got.
He scores both,
but he scores one of them with a header. He'd never scored with a header, I think, before.
He's 1.69 meters. Yeah. He's not supposed to score headers.
And it was just extraordinary. And you know, this kind of game that reopened the title race. And of course, Real Madrid would Real Madrid would go on to win it, wouldn't they? Or is this the Guardiola year? No, that's fair.
Yeah,
no, they did hang on. Yeah.
They did hang on. It's funny because he is still on the Barcelona website under the sort of Barcelona Legends section. They
should have a cult hero section, shouldn't they?
We saw Legends. La Liga started tweeting about cult heroes.
Yes.
I think we're having an influence,
again, influencing the culture.
Yes. But yeah, like I said, he's still on the Barcelona website as a legend. They've got a very nice compilation of all his goals on there. So he's still fondly thought of by Barcelona.
And he's subsequently gone into work as kind of a football agent. He's been with Puyol as his business partner. And so they've been involved in quite a lot of...
And I think obviously that tells you something about the reason why he was at Espanyol, because it was partly about the desire to stay there, you know, to stay in the city, to not move on, to just kind of get on with his life and just do his things and not have the hassle. You know, even Puyol, who didn't much like the media, is a much, much, much bigger media presence than De La Peña. Mm. Now, I know he achieved more. He was part of the Spanish national team that won the World Cup and all that kind of thing. But it's still very striking. There was a nice interview I found with Raúl Tamudo, which basically sums up, I think, De La Peña in a phrase. He said, De La Peña used to say to me, "You run, and I'll give it to you." And he said, "And I'd be running, and the ball would then turn up in front of me." He said, "And I had no idea how it got there. I just knew that it would." And he would say to me, "You run, I'll pass." And that's what they did.
And it worked out pretty well for them, certainly for a few years. So that's Ivan De La Peña, cult hero, certainly for Espanyol, and also to a lesser extent, perhaps, for Barcelona.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Let's move on and talk about Germán El Mono Burgos. You know who he is. You've seen him many times, but you might not know his cult hero status as a player. Obviously, he is the assistant to Diego Pablo Simeone at Atletico Madrid.
And quite a character in a looming kind of giant figure on the touchline.
Slightly less giant now.
He's
had liposuction and he is suddenly skinny.
And he's had his hair cut as well.
Yeah, really did happen overnight. He's also wearing these slightly weird futuristic glasses. I remember he was wearing those Google glasses for a while.
He was the first one ever to wear them on the touchline.
So to make him like Terminator, so he's kind of looking there and there's information coming down the side of his eyeballs.
I mean, they should make a movie about his life, because there've been a lot of chapters, a lot has gone on over.
But they should make it with him starring in it
as himself.
Because I think Mono Burgos playing Mono Burgos would be really quite special.
Let's start off in Argentina, obviously, where he was a goalkeeper and he was extremely successful with River. Just before we go on, the nickname Mono It means monkey in Spain, but I think in South America, mono also means cute.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of sarcastic. They're sarcastically calling him mono because he was this big, almost oafish looking guy with a beard and long hair. And I think that's where
He said it started by being gorilla, and then it went from gorilla to mono, which was a combination of the two things. Right. They're sort of, you know, you're this big kind of simian creature almost, but at the same time.
Yeah.
You're also, look at this thing. And he's, you know, and he's a massive man. He's got sausages for fingers. You know, he's one of those kind of blokes. And he sort of invades your space. And he's fantastically kind of big-hearted at the same time as being slightly frightening. And this is the guy who said to Jose Mourinho once, "I'm not Tito Villanova. I'll rip your head off on a touchline." And he's sort of looking at me thinking, yeah, you probably could as well.
Yes, I mean, physically, he could well do it. As we said, he was a goalkeeper, started off at River.
And like I say, there did well. They won the Libertadores. He was playing for the River team that had players like Crespo and Ortega in it. So he had a very, very good start to his career there. Again, if there's one clip I can urge you to go and find, it's a game between River and Vélez from the Argentinian League. Mono Burgos in goal for River. José Luis Chilavert in goal for Vélez. A foul is committed by River just inside the Vélez half. And who should take a quick free kick but Chilavert himself? And he scores. Because Mono Burgos is
from
off his
miles
line.
And miles
from inside
out,
his own half. It is terrific. But it's not the best example of Mono Burgos' goalkeeping.
I think the best example of his goalkeeping might well be him saving a penalty with his face.
Mm. Yes.
In the first Madrid derby after Atletico came back
up. It was Figo who took it. I think it broke his nose because
there was blood everywhere, and he was wearing this lucky red cap. I mean, he really did look like sort of a joke figure.
If you haven't seen any photos of him as a player, I mean, he's an extraordinary figure now, but then maybe even more so because he had the really long hair. He had either the headband or the hat. He wore trousers. He often wore long sleeves. They were bright colours as well.
Yeah.
He was the most extraordinary looking figure.
Let's try and go a little bit sort of chronologically. So obviously from Argentina, he moves to Mallorca.
Yes.
His first team in Spain at a time when Real Mallorca were really good. 1999.
Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
He was part of a very good Mallorca team.
This is a team that reaches a European final. It's a team that does very, very well in La Liga.
Although he didn't play.
He was number two to Leo Franco. Yeah.
So he didn't play that much. There's one notable incident that's worth mentioning. We've mentioned that he's quite a difficult, imposing character.
Yes.
This was November 1999. It was Mallorca against Espanyol. And it's disputed what happened. Allegedly, the Espanyol forward Serrano used an incredibly disrespectful term that is used
in
Spain.
He said, "You South American bleep, I'm going to
have sex with your mum."
Yes.
And Mono Burgos knocked him out. Knocked him unconscious.
Yes.
I think he was stretched off. And the punishment was quite severe. 11-game ban.
And that was basically the end of his time at Mallorca, because after that, he never really recovered the trust of the coach. And then coach changed, and it was Aragonés who came in and said,
"You've caught me out there.
You don't count for me.
Yes, you're not in my plans.
You're not in my plans." Leo Franco is the number one, and he left. He left Mallorca, but big things were to come.
Yes.
As he joined up with Atletico Madrid.
And at a key time for them as well, because they, of course, had just been relegated. They're in the Segunda, and he played a big part in getting them.
And he talked about that as well as, and obviously it's easy to say this after the event, but he talked about that as being the move that he wanted to make, because he'd seen what Atletico were while playing for Mallorca in terms of the fans' response, in terms of the noise, in terms of the sense of identification. And we come back to something that we've been repeating a lot in this series, that idea that one of the things that makes these people cult heroes is the way that they identify or are seen to identify with the clubs at which they become cult heroes. And Mono Burgos Atletico Madrid is a great example of that. His famous quote about how if I'd gone to Real Madrid, they'd have made me cut my hair, but like this, I could go to Atleti.
He starred in an incredible advert that Atleti put out. Have you seen this?
Yeah, the one coming out the sewers. It's absolutely brilliant. So Atletico Madrid had gone down to the second division. Famously, Jesus Hill came up with this phrase that would be just one little, un añito en el infierno, one little year in hell. They were there for 2 years. When they eventually came back to kind of express this idea that they come back from the second division, they were back where they should be, they have this advert done by the advertising people of Mono Burgos emerging from a Madrid sewer.
And it's right in the centre of town. It's the famous the Metropolis building, which is where Gran Via meets Calle Alcalá. If you've ever been there, literally a manhole cover is sort of thrown off the street, and emerging from, as you say, from the sewers is Mono Burgos poking his head up, and it says, "Ya, Mono Burgos, ya estamos aquí."
We're here now. Yeah, Mono Burgos said in a nice interview. He said, "Well, you know what advertising executives are like." He said, "I think they probably wanted someone ugly to do it." He then added, "These days, I'm not sure I'd get out." Which I quite like. He wouldn't fit. He wouldn't
no
fit.
Way.
He'd be stuck like a cartoon character, his belly there, his legs dangling underneath him.
I have to mention at this point my most, my only real contact with Mono Burgos is subsequently since he's been assistant manager at Atletico Madrid. And every time that Atletico Madrid have come to the Bernabeu, me in my sort of day job role as Real Madrid TV sort of presenter
all
and reporter.
Goddess? God.
Thank you, Sydney. Anyway, we have a small sort of set in just behind the mix zone, and we were doing our pre-match show. And basically, every time Atletico Madrid come, he comes, stands by one of the cameramen. The cameraman, he knows the same cameraman. The cameraman's smoking. He comes up, says, "Give me a cigarette." So he sits there and just has a fag with the cameraman. Very relaxed.
He's incredibly likable, but there's a depth to it as well. And obviously, that depth then comes through and gets reflected in a number of key moments in his career, but more importantly, in his life when he has cancer, for example. And he finds out, I think, on the Friday, and he says to the doctor wants to operate. He says, "Well, I've got a game on Sunday, so we can operate on Monday." So he plays another game, which I think actually might even have been away at Mallorca but I'm not completely sure about that. And then I interviewed Saul a few years ago, and it was Saul who, when he had all those kidney problems, and Saul basically said to doctors, take it out, and it's Mono Burgos who goes to see him and basically says, "Right, let me tell you what this is about. Let me tell you about cancer. Let me tell you about overcoming this." And it's Mono Burgos that takes on that kind of paternal role of talking him through it, giving him the guidance, telling him, "Look, there are some things you don't piss around with."
Why are he and Simeone such a good team? Because they've been coaching together since 2011. They started in Argentina and came together as a package to Atleti. They obviously knew each other before that as well as players. But why do they work so well together?
He says it's because he gives tranquility, which is difficult to imagine when you see Mono Burgos. He has none of the pessimism that Simeone has, and he just has the kind of the evenness, and you can sort of see that Simeone is this wild kind of character, and Mono Burgos is this great big bear of a man who,
there's a paternal air about him.
Definitely.
Yes.
And you know,
so maybe he's
Baloo.
Down,
he is Baloo, isn't he?
Yes.
The Jungle Book.
Yes, but with an edge, because we've been talking about his footballing ability. We really have to mention his musical ability as well, which just adds to the cult status of this guy. Have a listen to this. Soy un perro viejo, no tengo marca ni peluquero, nací solo con el viento y las lluvias de febrero. That is Mono Burgos' hit, Perro Viejo.
And one of many.
Old Dog.
Many
and even the title of it is a very kind of Mono Burgos type thing, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
If you check out any, there's lots and lots of live footage of him performing with his bands, both on TV and in concerts. And his presence as a front man is... it's really quite impressive.
Oh, yeah, no,
he does it well. It's not. This
is
not just
rubbish.
This isn't Jesse.
This isn't Jesse doing a rap video. You know what I mean?
JJMA, wasn't it? His
what's wrong with
Jesse's alter ego?
Yeah.
Have you watched
Big Flow?
Video?
Big Flow.
I quite like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, as we sort of reach the end of this podcast, again, I'm sort of reflecting on what we've said before, and I think it's absolutely right that these players are cult heroes because of the clubs that they are at. So Mono Burgos is quite evident that he wouldn't have been necessarily a cult hero at Real Madrid. The fans wouldn't have taken to him. It wasn't a fit. But Atletico have a slightly different identity. They did. And with De La Peña, Espanyol, maybe there's something about being a sort of an underachiever. They have a lot of potential, Espanyol, but they've never really quite reached it there. They've had a bit of glory like Espanyol.
And maybe even with time, I'm sure this wasn't the case to start with as well, but maybe there's even an element of the warmth for him being deeper because he came from Barcelona. And almost a sense of an Espanyol victory for the fact that he was better for them than he had been for Barcelona, or at least more consistent for them than he had been for Barcelona, that they could take someone from a club as big as Barcelona and make that person embrace them.
Yes.
And make that person be one of theirs instead.
Yes. No, there's definitely something of that as well. And also with Mono Burgos, the fact that he's come back and been part of the most successful coaching setup ever.
Absolutely. No, absolutely.
I mean, he's a god now.
Yeah, he's a god. And also the way that he talks and the way that he expresses all these things. You know, he is the one who came up with that phrase about Atletico Madrid as a club of the churros sellers and the binmen.
Yes.
And you know, in a way, you look at him and he's the binman.
Yeah.
He is Atletico Madrid's binman.
There's no frills. There's no frills about him. There used to not be any frills about
him. He's the binman who's hilarious.
Yeah.
He's the binman that's funny, that's got character, that's kind of maybe... Well, singing a rock song as he's doing it, you know, he is. And he's also, I think as well, one of the things that's not talked about, I think he's a lot cleverer than he looks.
Hmm.
I think this kind of earthy, kind of shouty, big bear of a man thing disguises actually the sharpness, the political awareness, the tactical astuteness as well.
Mm.
I mean, do you think it is possible?
I was going to say, speaks very good English, as we've seen. Again, check that out on YouTube if you haven't. Just look for Mono Burgos speaking English. Now, presumably with Kieran Trippier on the training ground every day.
Well, I watched him with Kieran Trippier training, and he was there going, very good, very good, more, back, go. No, stop, go.
Yeah. Well, you've sort of undermined yourself a little bit because you were saying he's very good tactically and speaks very good English. And then,
just go.
Yes. Yeah, but you're still explaining, but go at the right times. He's the one, I mean, and you know, Trippier will tell you this, that he's the one kind of pretty much physically grabbing Trippier and go, no, 2 more metres that way, 1 more metre the other way, go there, come back to that position. And, you know, and simplifying the message, but actually the kind of mechanical, what underlines it mechanically is really sharply understood, I think.
Mm. Yeah. Certainly hard not to have some kind of affection towards Mono Burgos.
He's the kind of guy that you sort of wish you could give a hug to, but you know that if he gave you a hug, you'd disappear.
Yes.
Somehow you'd be so engulfed in this kind of great big baloo of a man that you'd sort of disappear.
So there we go. That's episode 3, Mono Burgos and Iván de la Peña, without doubt, two cult heroes for their respective clubs. We've got another episode coming up in a couple of weeks' time, so make sure you join us for... TSFP presents Cult Heroes. Adios.
Cheerio.
Bye.